It is time to bring in David Tarachuk with the Media Beat. Dave, of course, has his own website, themediabeat.us. You can find him on Huffington Post as well. He's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And our belief is that David is on the other end of the line.
I am here. I am reporting in to you from the media capital of the world at about half an hour after sunrise here.
Well, that's very good, because it's good to know the sun came up, because, again, watching some of the output from the media capital of the world, you would think that...
the sun is not going to rise.
Ever. Yeah, sure. Ever. It's like Blade Runner version... I don't know. Blade Runner version, I don't know
the
what.
The darkest version of
yes.
Blade Runner, yes.
Well...
No. We're still responding to the circadian rhythms and pumping out stuff as ever. But how reliable our stuff is open to question every time. And I'm glad to raise those questions every week with you.
Yeah, and it's just unfortunately, I'm starting to bore myself. But that's
it's
all.
It's getting to be very samey. That's true.
No, and it's just sad because. Bigger than the fact that it is tedious beyond belief to just look at these things and say, yes, but. I think two things caught my eye, but it's not even relevant what those two things are. It's the effect that it is having on nominally functional individuals who are now so caught up in the someone referred to it yesterday, the national nervous breakdown.
that's not a bad phrase for it.
No, it's not a bad phrase, but it is a misapprehension, and it is creating, let's just say, more misunderstanding than not. Because once you get outside a particular bubble, the national nervous breakdown isn't. So they're kind of wandering around going, huh? And that's
if we concentrate on national politics now, and I guess international politics too, I think you'd be very tempted to say that everyone's in a state of extreme nervousness. And inevitably, a little bit of journalistic exaggeration could lead that to seem like a nervous breakdown for everyone. It's not that, but there really is a lot of fragmentation going on in the world of politics and policy making. It is an extraordinary scene for anyone to investigate and report on. I think journalists are going through a particularly trying time, and it's good for them. But if we all treat it as if we're in the middle of a nervous breakdown, then we're not doing our job properly. Our job is to investigate calmly and sanely. Sanity is a preciously desired commodity now, and in somewhat rare supply, it has to be said.
Right, and that I think is where the problem lies. At I was quite interested, but just in my minor sampling on the way to trying to attempt endeavoring to locate some sort of sporting event that wasn't emotional as well. I heard a lot of opinion, and again, we come back to this each week almost, but there has been such an utter reconfiguration of presentation so that opinion rules. And it's hard for, unless you're a dinosaur, such as myself, or a friend of mine who called from California, Northern California, where, where she wasn't being burnt up, because one of the other things that happens on television is because of the way, and even smaller on a mobile device, is you've got a snapshot, but it's a very small snapshot, and it doesn't give you the sense of scale. Or if it does give you the sense of scale, it's still not necessarily in context. It's in the context of the device and the size of the screen.
Those terrible fires in Northern California are so compelling and so in a literal way, kind of fill the screen and in a sort of representational way, crowd everything else off of our field of vision and consideration. It's very easy to believe that all of Northern California is going up in smoke. But I mean, that's true of every big event that happens, and it's part of human consciousness. I think journalists contribute to it and worsen it, but I think we all tend to focus on the thing that seems most important to us, and everything else becomes peripheral, and sometimes gets crowded out of our vision entirely.
But what I was going to say about that, because that's what I, you know, she was X miles away and it wasn't affecting, you know, they've had theirs in the past, but it wasn't affecting her. At all events, what she said is, could we please just go back to half an hour of news in the morning and a half an hour of news at night?
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
And, you know, yeah. It's simply to, yes, wouldn't that be nice? And I said, wouldn't that be nice? Because maybe the focus would then be on the news. Now, I understand that news, you've explained this year in, year out, you've explained to me, news has to be new. You know, it's...
Not now, it seems.
No, not now. Now it's just...
If you have 24 hours to fill, if you're a cable station committed to what they call 24-hour news, you have to fill the space, and that inevitably means repetition, and that rolling repetition of stuff is padded out with opinion, as you say, and opinion takes the center stage for many of these stations, and much of the time. Many programs are almost entirely devoted to it. You maybe get 2 minutes or 4 minutes of news points at the opening of the hour. But from then on, it's free-range talk.
So then how do you take someone who's not of a certain age at this point, who doesn't know what it should be? I always think about this in cookery terms, because if you don't know how something's supposed to taste, you don't know what you're eating.
You don't know what you're doing. You don't know how good it can be, and of course, you don't know how bad it can. You can make it turn out either.
Yeah. And I sort of shake my head when I listen to either people of a different generation. When I say this, I don't mean perfectly functional people. Either tuned out completely because they're just not interested, or they don't have the skills any longer to separate the
wheat from the chaff. Yeah, that's true, because it's all coming at you in pretty much the same sort of torrent. It's like hoping you might get a drink when someone turns a fire hose on you. Won't. You're just going to blast of force against you. So what can you do? My suggestion would be to, you know, spend some time either yourself or going to a trusted source that you believe can do it for you, distilling what's really the hardcore of what's coming at you. What is the really important stuff? What is the really uncontestable information at the hard center of much of the fluff that we're being deluged with? That's not easy, but it's possible. And you know what I would suggest, that you know, almost as an intellectual exercise to begin with, just to see if you can do it. But then maybe just instituted as a regular thing, it might become something like physical exercise. Every day you've set aside, I don't know, 20 minutes just to think through the deluge and see if you can draw out the main points and distill them and condense them into something which is just manageable and understandable for today, and think, oh, okay, well, I don't need any more. That will do. That will be my package for today. Maybe that would just work. And you can just dismiss the rest, perhaps not even turn on the TV or go to, to whatever other device you might use for the rest of the day. Just use it for the fun things that these devices were, I guess, mainly intended for in the first place.
Initially, it was fun. I was startled to find this on Axios, and it's according to, I guess, an e-marketer or something. But this is from the 10th of October. individuals in the U.S. manage to spend the equivalent of half a day consuming media. Adults will spend an average of 12 hours, 1 minute per day with major media. Now, that's
a lot.
That's a lot. that is a harmful lot. And like, when it's affecting
to do any one thing for that amount of time is going to be at least unbalancing for your life.
Right, but even even if it's different mediums,
media.
So it's like
different
media. But what I'm it's like, okay, well, an hour. Well, I was binge watching this, streaming this, but it's still an incredible amount of. And again, I can only be descriptive. If you are standing looking at a painting, your eyes widen out to the – I'm just in a museum, for example. Your eyes widen out to the size of the room. You just get a sense of scale. If you are looking at anything on that screen, you don't have – you've got a sense of relative scale perhaps, but not really. And it's messing with people's abilities to get through their lives and think critically.
Right. Well, go on a little journey with me. One suggestion is to do what I'm starting to call the find the missing pieces exercise. This week, for instance, NBC has been called out by President Trump for telling, guess what, fake news. The NBC reported that that the members of the cabinet were concerned about President Trump's misunderstanding or lack of understanding of the real state of affairs with our country's stock of nuclear weapons, particularly when it comes to facing off against, Russia, of course, and North Korea these days, too. And it was suggested that it was reported fairly authoritatively, if anonymously, by NBC News that Trump wanted to increase our nuclear arsenal by 10 times. This is decried by the president as fake news. and more than that, the president goes on to suggest in one of his infamous tweets that NBC's license, as he calls it, to broadcast, might come under federal scrutiny and perhaps denial,
which you can't.
Which is something of a threat. Which is, in fact, you can't do.
Well, you can do
stations. You can do in a network, but you can't take NBC's network as a network. You can't take its so-called license away because it doesn't have a license.
It doesn't. That's the sad thing. He really does not know anything about the inner workings of the government. That all the independent stations that are under the NBC flagship station, even the NBC-owned and operated stations, which I think there's 9 of them, but they're all independent operations. You can't strip NBC.
Yeah, the man is frequently called a creature of the media. He doesn't know an awful lot about the media, as well as knowing some things, which obviously stand him in good stead. But my overall point is that that's the turn the story went. It became a kind of free speech issue. Oh, the president's trying to take... trying to shut down broadcasters and all of that. But what you can do with that story, if you're so minded, you can go to the you could go to the central heart of it. And if you do just a little bit of digging, and this is one of the good things about the technological revolution that has overtaken our media, you can do quite a lot of simple digging and come up with in this case, a very, very, very intriguing and I think very revealing hardcore to what's going on. It turns out, if you do take a careful look at all of this, that Donald Trump has a long history with the nuclear arsenal. And I don't necessarily try to maintain that this means he I will not, in fact, try and maintain that this means he has a lot of knowledge about it. But he has got something, it's arguable to say that he has something of a of an obsession with it. You can go back in history and see that he was giving an interview. He was taking part in a, as he always would in those days, take part in willingly in a newspaper profile of him. This is by the Washington Post, but way back in 1984, when he posits the idea that he Donald Trump Jr. He Donald Trump. Let's just give him the simple title. He's the daddy now. It would be a good idea if he were given the task of negotiating with the Soviet Union on the size of our nuclear arsenals. That is a frightening thought, and a striking thought in itself. But to look at the actual words he used, and you end up seeing that he's always been the same man that he is now. He's saying back in 1984, it would take me an hour and a half to learn everything there is to learn about missiles. I think I know most of it anyway already. That was said by Donald Trump in 1984, and then scoot on not very long to 1990, where he does one of the most classic pieces he's ever done in the world of media, which is a feature on him in Playboy magazine, the best place you might imagine, the absolute best place. Trump and Playboy just went together like a horse and carriage. He's saying there, I've always thought about the issue of nuclear war. It's a very important element in my thought process, he says. well, interesting. He calls it the ultimate catastrophe. But you know what he compares it to? He compares it to the way that we don't really talk about it. That's what he says. We don't talk about it. It's like an illness that nobody wants to talk about. He says, I believe, here is a direct quote here, I believe the greatest of all stupidities, I believe the greatest of all stupidities is people believing it will never happen. Nuclear war, he means, because everybody knows how destructive it will be, so nobody wants to talk about it. What bull? Bull beep, right? He was very clear about what he thought, and he thought that this is a very possible and very usable kind of weaponry. And you know, you get the end result during the campaign. He's taken to task by, well, I remember it was on the MSNBC town hall they had back in April 26. It was still in the primary stage of the election campaign. But Chris Matthews was asking very, very deliberately, very precisely, would there be a time when they, nuclear weapons that is, could be used? And Trump says, possibly. And then when Matthews tries to stress the point and say that kind of talk can seem like very reckless talk, and it's dangerous talking that way. And Trump says, well, why are we making them? Why do we make them, you know, if you're not going to talk about them and threaten to use them? Well, that's an interesting strain of continuous and in a way very consistent thinking about nuclear weapons, which we need to take very seriously, I think, especially now when it's coming to the fore, and he is actually the man in charge of the nuclear codes.
And again, that would be, just in terms of education, whatever your view, that would be something that you could spend a few minutes, you know, pulling that string instead of just relying on the headline. That what's so amazing about the headlines is the next day, of course, there's a new headline. I'm not talking about I'm not literally talking about him, but it's just every day there's a different headline.
Well, a whole new headline can be generated about Trump every hour. That's true, but sure. If you want to look for a core, if you want to look for some crystallized essence of one particular issue, then here's an opportunity to do it, and you can do it. You have a lot of tools at your disposal now. You can do it as a consumer, and it has to be said, any journalist can do this. Very, I added on a few, foot calls and a few personal calls. You can mass this into a very considered piece of analysis, and that's it's exactly that kind of journalism that I think is in very short supply right now. And I would want to look for the missing pieces. I mean, in fact, I'm thinking of making the Media Beat something of a forum now for. We can even call it the missing pieces. What's not really coming to the fore?
That's right.
What can we see if we just look under the morass of material that is coming flowing toward us and at us? We can look for the missing pieces and put them together and get a full picture.
Thank you very much. The missing piece, David Tereshchuk, the Media Beat.
Thank you.